These Days.
Kids These Days.
This is Kids These Days.
Today's show should be lots of fun. We're talking about laughter and good humor today on Kids These Days. You hear people say it a lot. It's good for you to laugh. Well, is it? And why is it? And why might learning to laugh help when it comes to the ups, downs, and all arounds of family life? That's our discussion today. Also this hour, little kids tell jokes. Plus, where does humor fall within a list of traditional Inupiaq values? That and much, much more today on the program. I used to hate it when she'd say it, but my mom always told me I should learn to laugh at myself. I'm not sure I do that every time I should, but I have gotten better. What about you? How does laughter enter into your life, and has it ever helped you or your family? Tell us, because we want to know. Post a comment to our Kids These Days Radio Facebook page or comment at kidsthesedays.org. Joining me for today's conversation about laughter and good humor are two people who know a lot about the subject. Jason Martin joins me in the Anchorage studio today. He's a third-generation Alaskan and one of the founding members of Alaska's longest-running comedy troupe, Scared Scriptless Improv. When he's not on stage, he says he loves spending time kayaking and hiking with his wife and son. Jason's 7-year-old son is already funnier than he is, which, he says, proves there's more to nature than nurture. Thanks for being with us today, Jason.
I'm glad to be here, Shanna. Thanks.
And also we have Mary Kay Morrison. Mary Kay Morrison is an international humor educator. She spent decades in the classroom and says she enjoys learners of all ages. For more than 20 years, she's worked as a keynote speaker and conference educator, teaching today's teachers and professional educators about using humor to promote balance and reduce stress. Mary Kay serves on the board of directors for the Association of Applied and Therapeutic Humor. She joins us today from her home in Illinois. Thanks to you for being with us today on Kids These Days, Mary Kay.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
Well, I'd like to start by asking you, Jason.
Sure.
You know, how did you become a funny guy? When did you know that you were a funny guy?
I think my parents probably knew it before I did, and with many teachers and counselors probably able to support that fact. The term class clown gets thrown around a lot, and I think I heard that from a pretty early age and didn't really know what that meant for my future, except probably some poor grades in school as a result of it. I always enjoyed school just for the social side of things, but I realized that more of my interest in school was because of the social side, and that's when I really enjoyed just being around people and making people laugh and the comedy side of things. I got involved in improv originally for just as a way of augmenting my stagecraft, doing scripted shows and dropping lines or other people dropping lines and not really knowing how to recover from that. So started learning some improv as a way of getting better for my scripted performances, and found that it just kind of became my love and took over. And that's really the direction I went with the stage.
So then when did improv and comedy meet each other?
For me, it was, you mean in history?
No, I mean specifically for you.
Specifically for me. it really was kind of a serendipitous moment with, it was a production of Anchorage Community Theater. It was Fiddler on the Roof. And there's a big song and dance number right in the middle of the show that sets up the entire second act. And it's the whole To Life and Reb Tevye and Laser Wolf. But a line was dropped, and it's a line that is very similar to a line that is the exit of that song. So when the line was dropped and somebody else picked up the line, we missed the entire song and dance number that set up the second act. Everybody just stood there like a deer in the headlights, because we all knew it was happening. We all saw it coming. We just didn't know how to recover. So in watching that and just being part of the train wreck as it happened, it just happened to be one of the nights the director was in the audience, and he came backstage at intermission and said, okay, I don't care what you have to do, you have to fix this, you have to fix this. And we're all just, I don't know how. So I realized then that I needed to do something that was going to help my craft kind of become better and accelerate. So that's when the improv first started to sink into my mind. But then fast forward about 2 years later, we're doing Guys and Dolls. It's a very funny production. Jill Bess, it was an amazing production. The whole production was just fun. The cast was amazing. So that's when I kind of started seeing improv and comedy kind of come together for me, whereas improv was just kind of a theater craft before. Now it's kind of a standalone comedy craft for me. And it was a friend of a friend who approached me after a show and said, have you ever thought about doing comedy improv? And he was one of the three founding members of Scared Scriptless. That was Tom Atkinson, who came to me, and we started the troupe at that point.
Excellent. Yeah. Well, Mary Kay Morrison, let me ask you, you're a humor educator, and I'm wondering if you can just tell us a little bit about what it is exactly that you do to be a humor educator. You're educating people on how to be humorous or on how to use humor. You know, how does it go?
That's a really good question. I got into it originally. I started as a kindergarten teacher, and I know the research is very clear that children learn through play. But the more I learned about the research, the more hooked I got on humor. And we learn through our emotions. And in schools today, we a lot of times focus on fear-based emotions. In other words, testing, grades, discipline can all be fear-based. And when you look at the research, that's really the worst way to learn. So I started looking at the positive emotions and laughter and play, and started working with numerous people in the field that had more knowledge than I did at the time about how humor impacts learning. And I've learned a tremendous amount about the powerful benefits of humor in the learning process. And so what I do now is teach teachers about how to use humor to help kids learn. And I currently teach several courses in college on how to use humor to help kids learn. Humor does plant memories. It helps with retention. It keeps kids engaged. Kids love humor. That's the number one thing that most kids want in a teacher. And the other thing that's awesome for both teachers and students is that it combats stress. And the more research that comes out, in fact, I just found an article on prenatal stress and how that can actually impact the developing brain of a child, that is really harmful. Too much of that can be very harmful for mm-hmm. the development of a child and for learning. So humor is a great relaxer. It does reduce stress. And so I teach teachers how to use humor to do all of the great things that humor has for benefits.
Well, maybe I'd love to hear an example of, you know, how you might help a teacher in one of your workshops, for example, learn how to incorporate humor in a lesson that they've maybe done for years and years and haven't had humor involved. Can you give me an example of how that might look?
Sure. A lot of teachers are very concerned today about the testing process and assessment. And in fact, a couple of my own children are teachers today. One of the teachers that I've worked with has actually developed humor in the assessment process. He had his students take the chapter of the book and assigned each of them a certain portion of the chapter, and their job was to create a test question that was in the form of a riddle or a pun or a joke, and so he used those in the test. So every student submitted a question in the form of something fun. So the entire test was jokes, riddles, and puns. And the kids loved it. They loved yeah. taking the class. They loved coming up with the questions. And they remember it much better than if it's pretty dry or boring. So that's one of the quick examples I can give you.
Well, I think this is actually a perfect time, since you're talking about a test where a teacher incorporated jokes that the students themselves made. I think it's a great time to share this. One of the best parts of being around little kids is laughter. Kids seem to be always laughing, and it's hard not to laugh along with them, even if the jokes they tell don't make any sense at all. Kids These Days contributor Jessica Cochran visited her son's preschool class at Tenina Child Development Center in Anchorage for a dose of 3 to 5-year-old humor. Let's take a listen.
You want to go first? You want to tell me a joke?
Okay.
Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Chicken bear.
What was that?
Chicken bear, I said.
Chicken bear who?
Mom. Chicken chew.
Chicken bear, chicken chew?
I have a joke.
You have one? Okay, what's your joke?
Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Jude.
Jude who?
Jude sandwich.
Jude sandwich?
Knock, knock.
Who's there?
A door.
A door who?
A duck duck. A door duck.
A door duck?
Yes.
Oh, good one.
Knock, knock. Knock,
knock. Who's there?
Green pajamas you wear.
Green pajamas you wear who?
Silly. Silly ducks.
Silly ducks. Who's there?
Green pajamas underwear.
Green pajamas underwear? That's a good one. Is there more? Oh. Green pajamas underwear who?
Squirrels. Lana. Say bear.
That was a joke.
This is Kids These Days, an international humor educator, Mary Kay Morrison, an improvisational performer and father, Jason Martin, are with me here today. I'm Shannon Sheehy, and we're talking about laughter and good humor this hour, and of course, hearing some jokes told by 3 to 5 year olds. And it makes me think a little bit about children as they age and how sense of humor can change. I'm wondering if either of you have any responses, first of all, to those jokes, then also any comments on how different age kids think different things are funny.
In my book that I wrote, I have a chapter on how people develop their sense of humor. And I've identified 5 different stages in humor development. Mm-hmm. And one of my favorite stages is the one that you just displayed about kids doing knock-knock jokes, because that is a pattern that kids learn. Once they get to be a certain age, they finally get the pattern and they get the knock-knock jokes. But until a certain age, they don't quite understand the format of the joke. And so humor is developmental. You know, there's different stages. We started with peekaboo, getting kids to laugh and smile, which every parent does, and proceeds through puns and riddles. And then hopefully as adults, we get to what I call the peak experiences. So anyway, that's
And you say, well, first of all, you mentioned your book, and is this using humor to maximize learning or using humor to maximize living? Because you're the author of both of those titles, correct?
Right, right. The first book is the one that I really talk about the development of kids and how they develop their sense of humor.
Okay.
And how we as adults need to continue with that. And I really believe that adults all should continue playing. And Jason's a real example of that, too, that he's doing improv, which I'm fascinated with. So,
as am I.
Now, why is that?
I'd love to see it in schools more. I think it's a great, great technique and a great tool.
Well, let's talk about improvisation. Like, how is that, you know, how is that a unique type of humor? Sounds like it is, at least according to the two of you.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. The wonderful thing about improv is it is kid-based. I mean, it is what kids do all day on the playground. It's what they, you know, younger kids do at school, where they just play and accept whatever the kids around them are doing. And even if they want to be doing something different than those other kids, they find a way of merging their games. And we as grown-ups say, well, this is what I want. This is what I'm going to do. And then another grown-up says, well, this is what I want. This is what I'm going to do. And that creates friction. And in improv, you can't have a successful scene or have fun playing with your partner if there's friction like that. You need to find a way to agree to accept what is presented to you by your scene partner and move forward with it. So kids already have developmentally better skills for improv than we as adults do, because we spend our entire life censoring ourselves, and we learn you can't say that or you can't do that. And so in class, you get titled things like class clown or whatever that is. And as a result,
you have to live with it your whole life.
Your whole life, you got that stigma. Yeah, right there. You just can't get over it. Can't get over it. I'm weeping here in the studio. I don't know if you can make that out there, Mary Kay.
Well, that's a great description of the improv part. Then tell me, you know, this isn't just, you can improvise many things, but this is comedy that you do in particular. Well, so How do you just, and you just do it with the attention of being funny the whole time?
You know, the best comedy is a comedy that isn't forced. It's not, I mean, you can get up there and make underwear jokes, and you can get up there and make fart jokes. I'm not sure if I can say that on the radio. So I whisper it as if to make that okay. So the best comedy comes from the truth in that comedy, the honesty of a situation. So if you're trying really hard to be funny, those scenes can be funny, but they're also very forced. The scenes where something naturally occurring happens, a very honest exchange between two people, is going to be more interesting for everybody watching that scene, as well as the performers themselves, because they're not just looking for a gag. They're not just looking to drive to a pun that will make and get a quick laugh. The deeper, richer, truer laughs come from honesty. So if you can try not to be funny, you'll find funny. Whereas if you're trying to be funny, you'll probably be funny. But we always try to encourage that side of it, just the truth in comedy.
And I really liked going back to what you said. You said if you're going to play with a person on stage. Mm-hmm. I like that word because we often, you know, reserve the word play for children.
Absolutely.
We don't always apply it to adult interaction. So I like that that's a connection between young people and humor and adults doing it as well.
It's a funny thing there too, because it's a word in my vocabulary. Through improv, I avoided because I tried to... I wouldn't say highbrow improv, but I tried to make it more theatrical. I've been doing that for about 12 years with Scared Scriptless. And over the years, I've learned that we tried to make it a very successful theater organization. And the more we realized it was just, it really was play. So in trying to avoid that word and trying to say, you know, we are performing and other theater-based words that have a vocabulary and a nomenclature associated with theater, that kind of highbrows what we do. And the more I realized I was doing that, it kind of takes away from the craft, because what it really boils down to is kids playing in the playground. That's all we do. When we get up there, we're just trying to make Barbie play with the Pokemon is all we're really trying to do in those few minutes we have on stage.
Well, this is Kids These Days, and we're talking about laughter and good humor today. And could laughter really be the best medicine? To find out how laughter and positive emotions can affect the body and mind, we spoke with one of the leading researchers on humor in the medical community. Dr. Lee Burke is a professor of medicine at Loma Linda University in California. And as he told Kids These Days producer Sarah Gonzalez, he's serious about laughter.
Dr. Lee Burke, thank you so much for speaking with us on Kids These Days.
Oh, pleasure to be with you.
So your research focuses on the effects that positive emotions like laughter can have on the human body. And we're not just talking about how laughing makes you feel better. You're actually studying how laughing can be used in the treatment of serious medical conditions. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, we're a fair way from saying that laughter can cure one from cancer or resolve major diseases. We're not quite familiar with what really is happening therapeutically with laughter, other than starting to document pieces of the puzzle, if I can put it that way, where we know that laughter, or more correctly, probably I should say mirthful laughter, happy or joyful laughter, can actually modulate or change various physiological processes from, for example, lowering stress hormones that potentially are detrimental in the long run when they're released on a long-term or chronic basis. The effects of laughter on the immune system, which again potentially holds a lot of promise for reducing such diseases, autoimmune type diseases, or enhancing the immunity relative to fighting off infections, or maybe even helping to fight off cancer in enhancing immunity and recognizing non-self, which is what cancer cells are.
What is mirthful laughter? Because I noticed that this was included in the title of many of your research papers and presentations, and there was an alternate phrase for it or term for it that you use called laugher size. What is mirthful laughter and laugher size?
There are different ways to look at laughter. One can laugh because one is nervous. One can laugh because you're embarrassed. Certain disease processes relative to mental illnesses, schizophrenics, will laugh uncontrollably. We're defining laughter as a process of joyfulness or happy laughter. And the term that is classically used is called mirthful laughter. And the physiology is correlated or corresponds to that joyful laughter, where we'll have various physiological changes that go along with that joyful or happy laughter. And actually, that the term mirthful laughter is quite ancient. It really comes from the sort of the biblical axiom of the Old Testament of the Bible, and merry heart does good like a medicine. And it's that merry heart or mirthfulness is what we're trying to understand. We're actually now starting to use the term laugher-size for the activity of repetitive laughter. And the reason we're using that term is that repetitive use of laughter, mirthful laughter, if you please, has physiological changes that are very, very much similar to what we see with moderate exercise. So it makes sense for us to call this activity a exercise, and if you please, laugher-size.
Okay. You've documented some of your research findings about the positive effects that mirthful laughter can have on blood pressure, cholesterol levels, and also on diabetes. Can you explain to us in lay terms, what does laughter do to help these sorts of conditions? Like, what's happening in our body when we laugh?
Well, again, if we go back to the idea that laughter, or the use of laughter, repetitive laughter, mirthful laughter, again, is very similar to moderate exercise, the changes that we observe are very beneficial relative to optimizing one's health status. It's sort of, you can think of it like tuning up a car. Laughter, much like exercise, literally tunes up various components in the body. It optimizes the mechanisms. And that sort of makes sense, because when we exercise, we optimize the way that we break down bad cholesterol and increase the good cholesterol we call HDL, high-density lipoproteins. Well, believe it or not, laughter does the same thing. And so we see this repetitively with the parallels between laughter, if you please, laugher size, and regular physical exercise. And it's really a tuning up of various mechanisms in the body and in the brain, if you please, because we really can't separate brain from body, and which allows then for optimal usage of insulin and burning glucose and utilizing glucose. Our blood vessels are more relaxed. Dr. Michael Miller at the University of Maryland has shown that the blood vessels will actually vasodilate or expand or relax with laughter. Of course, if you have high blood pressure, the blood vessels are very contracted and very tight, so you have high blood pressure. So here is a modality like exercise. Laughter does the same thing. And it's a continuum of that kind of parallel through a number of physiological mechanisms in the body.
Now, Dr. Burke, does laughter have the same effects on people of all ages? Like, will the same positive effects be experienced by a 5-year-old, a 35-year-old, and a 75-year-old? Does it matter how old you are?
That's a great question. Absolutely super question. Isn't it interesting that a child who is only 3, 4, or 5 months old will laugh at incongruities that they may observe? And there's plenty of video that one can see and watch this reality. It's on YouTube, actually, among other places. I have quite a bit of this kind of material, where a baby will laugh at when the father rips a piece of paper or makes a strange noise. Now, the baby can't say one single word relative to the language of the culture, but yet can laugh at the noise or the incongruity of what the expectation is. Do we understand what all that's about? Not really. But the point is, it begins when we are so young, and which suggests that maybe we're programmed to laugh. So we see this then as we age. So the only problem is, as that child grows up, we tend to see that society says that laughter is really kind of silly. And when we send the kids off to school, we sort of socialize them that life is really serious stuff and that one shouldn't be silly or laugh. So we squelch that part of our humanness, if you please. And yet, as we become adults, we are looking for the best sitcom on television or the best comedy show to, so that we can enjoy that. And the reason we're enjoying that is because it makes us feel good. Mm. Now, that feeling good isn't nothing. It is really something. It's endorphins. It's dopamine in the brain. It's real stuff. Mm. And in the elderly, as we continue to age, we see the same substances that are released. In fact, even in the elderly, it's beneficial from the standpoint of where many cannot mobilize or move around because of their age, but yet can laugh. And we see changes in their appetite hormones with laughter, which then would make them hungry and feel like eating. So there becomes a very potential therapeutic value for the use of laughter, and particularly the elderly. So there is a myriad of things that go on through the life cycle with laughter.
That's so interesting. Dr. Lee Burke, thank you so much for speaking with us on Kids These Days.
My pleasure.
Dr. Burke spoke with Kids These Days producer Sarah Gonzalez from his office at Loma Linda University's School of Medicine. You can connect to his research by visiting kidsthesedays.org, where we'll post links to everything you hear on the show and on others. This is Kids These Days, and I'm Shannon Sheehy, and Jason Martin and Mary Kay Morrison join me today for a conversation about humor. And Mary Kay, I'd like to invite you to respond to that piece we just heard.
Oh, I'm so glad to. I've worked a lot with Dr. Lee Burke through the Association of Applied and Therapeutic Humor. Our mission is to take a look at humor and laughter and the benefits. And so we have people from all walks of life who do explore the research that he was talking about. I do want to highlight that several things, and Jason alluded to this as well, is that so often we inhibit people from laughing and having humor. And we see this in schools that Dr. Burke said that schools are serious business. And so in my role, what I've learned from the benefits of humor is that instead of asking kids to be more serious in school and teachers to focus on learning as work, that we need to make learning joyful and implement and insert humor and play and laughter whenever we can. It was interesting what Jason said about play having a negative connotation. I call that whole attitude towards play, laughter, and fun as humor phobia. I think in our society we have a fear. We are so focused on work and productivity that we ignore the benefits that we now know from research are critical for learning and for reducing stress. And humor and laughter can do that. So the goal that I have is to work with teachers and educators to let them know about the benefits of humor and laughter and to get rid of the humor phobia that exists in our schools. As kids go up into the school system, the higher in the grades that they go up, the less laughter, play, and fun are exhibited to the point where in most high schools, kids are sitting all for a long period of time. And Lee Burke referred to this as well, that exercise, we know that movement and exercise are critical to learning. So humor and laughter breaks are something that we advocate because of many of the medical reasons that he mentioned, but also because humor and laughter actually can facilitate the learning process.
And it seems like laughter science is something that might fit into a school classroom actually pretty easily.
Oh, yeah, that would be fantastic. I would just love a class on laughter, you know?
Yes.
The history of comedy 101. You know, that'd be amazing.
Well, we do have to take a quick break. This is Kids These Days. Today, Mary Kay Morrison and Jason Martin are talking with us about good humor and laughter and how those things can help so much in our family and everyday lives. We'll be right back after a break for more of that conversation. Kids These Days is a production of the Content Producers Guild. CPG supports independent media makers across Alaska. This program is recorded and distributed through partnerships with KSKA FM Anchorage and the Alaska Public Radio Network. We thank our partners and you, our listeners. Hello to Juneau, Haines, Skagway, and Clequan. Hey there, Dillingham and Chivac. And greetings, Kodiak, Anchorage, and the Matsu. Still to come today, the place of humor in one Alaska Native culture. Stay with us, and we'll be right back.
I love to laugh, ha, 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 loud and long and clear. I love to laugh, ho, 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 ho. It's getting worse every year. And the more I laugh, ha, 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 the more I fill with glee. And the more the glee, he, 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 the more I'm a merrier me, ha, ha, me, ho, ho, me, he, 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 the more I'm a merrier me. Oh, some people laugh through their noses, sounding something like this. Some people laugh through their teeth, goodness sakes, hissing and fizzing like snakes.
Kids These Days is a program that focuses on youth and family issues that affect all of us and our communities across this great state. We like to say we're raising Alaska's future today on the show by talking about early childhood development, typical teenage behaviors, issues around blended families, or what choices to make for your child's education. That's only to name a few of our varied topics. Those conversations start right here on the air, and they continue online at kidstheseDays.org. Join the Kids These Days community by logging on and tuning in. We're back. This is Kids These Days. I'm Shanna Sheehy, and I'm joined by scared, scriptless improv comedian Jason Martin and international humor educator Mary Kay Morrison today. We're learning about the power of good humor and the benefits of a good, hearty laugh. Post your jokes and comments to kidstheseDays.org or on our Facebook page. So I want to go back to you, Jason Martin,
sure.
And find out a little bit about something I heard that you do. So you're a performer and you're a dad, but then I believe that you teach comedy and improv to children. Is that correct?
That's also correct. Yeah, we have workshops and classes that we have with Scared Scriptless Improv. There's plenty of information on our website about it.
And we'll link to your website as well from our website at kidsthesedays.org.
That would be great.
Yes.
Yeah. So we'll give you 0.1000 or 0.001 cents for every link that you send our way. Very lucrative business, comedy improv is.
As is public, you know.
Public radio, yes, yeah, I bet. Yes. I bet. A lot of money there. second only to miming, I think. Those guys make the real money. That's where the real money is. What was the question? I'm just having so much fun playing here.
Tell me about how it is you get out and offer workshops for kids.
Sure. What we have right now is a Wednesday workshop that we do every Wednesday, and one of our troop members, Ryan, is leading that right now, and it's a phenomenal experience just to come play, and it's open to all ages. It's a very safe environment for any age. We also do adult workshops that are just that. They're meant for adults. The content is entirely different. But the Wednesday workshop is just a chance to come play. We don't teach. We don't grill anybody on what improv is or how it works. It's just, here's the game. Here's how it works. Now get up there and play. And what we're seeing is more people coming back for that, as opposed to just people showing up to see what it's about and then never seeing them again. They're getting interested in improv in a new way, instead of just sitting there in the audience and watching the show. Now they get a chance to come up and play the games they've seen us do. And it's wonderful because it shows the other side of it, that it really is an art. It really is a craft that, you know, like any muscle, you know, humor is a muscle you have to flex. It's one you have to work on to get better, to make it stronger. And people are finding that there are struggles on stage up there. It's not as easy as it looks. And the class does teach that. But then, you know, here's the adults struggling through this exercise, and then kids get up there and they just do it. And you're like, oh, that's how it's supposed to work. You know, because they've already got it figured out. They already know to play. They break the rules, the game still works, and it's still fun to watch. And that's really what's the most important thing. It's just comedy that's fun to watch for us. So And the kids have it all figured out.
That's great.
Yeah.
I can tell me something. Since you're the father of a 7-year-old, mm-hmm. you know, did your approach to comedy or your sense of humor even, was it at all impacted by becoming a father a family man?
Yeah, constantly. The biggest struggle I had with my son's birth was that my comedy was changing. You know, it used to be all pop culture references and what's happening in the news today. Not that I've ever been that news-wise, but at least I was more aware of what was going on in the news. And then all of a sudden it was diaper jokes. And then all of a sudden it was, you know, oh, I can't go to work today because my baby spit up on me. Ha ha. You know, so the points of reference for me on stage really were changing. And it was really challenging for me. Because prior to that, all the life aspects I had, all the life experience I had, were all kind of in the same fishbowl. And easy to draw from when I needed them. But now all of a sudden there's this new fishbowl I don't understand, and things are changing every day with him. And, you know, just every experience you have as a parent, you carry on to stage. And everything you have in life, in improv, you carry on to stage because that's staying in the moment. You can't think ahead. So if you just walk up there and you're like, oh, man, I'm so frustrated. I was up all night with my baby. And you're like, oh, crap, now this is real life. You know, I should have whispered that last word, I think. All of a sudden, it's my craft was changing, and I didn't know how or where it was coming from and things like that. But again, in staying in the moment, you just have to kind of let it happen. So that's been a challenge for me, is kind of coming to terms with that, mm-hmm. because not everybody in the audience is a father. Not everybody has a kid. So it's points of reference that not everybody has. But not unlike a pop culture reference, I can make a Britney Spears joke and only half the audience is going to get that as well. So it's just kind of understanding that and rolling with it as a challenge, as a father comes up. Yeah.
Yeah. I could see how you might be eliminating some of the people in your audience, mm-hmm. but at the same time, you might also be including some people that you might've missed otherwise.
Exactly.
You can
right, yeah.
imagine that shared experience.
Yeah.
So Mary Carey Morrison, you were an educator, as you said, before you became an educator of educators. So when you were in the classroom and beginning your professional journey, did you incorporate humor yourself in the classroom with the kids? Is that a place where maybe you got started on this journey?
I think I've always enjoyed humor and had fun. I always wanted to have fun. And first of all, let me just say that I really think what you're doing is awesome, Jason. Kudos to you for teaching kids and adults this. I just think it's so very important.
Thank you.
And I'm thrilled that you're doing that.
So are we.
One of the things that you mentioned that I think is also really important, if I can just piggyback on that.
Oh, absolutely.
When you asked him about, you know, how his humor changed, one of the things a lot of times I love doing with the workshops that I do conduct is a humor styles inventory. And
inventory, is that what you just said? Humor styles inventory? Okay.
Right. Uh-huh. We all have a different humor style. And so in doing that, I give people different jokes to look at and have them try to hone in on what kind of humor they like, because there's a lot of different kinds of humor. And what Jason just said is really important. Once I noticed at a workshop that a lot of people were laughing at the joke about a father who accidentally licked his finger, thinking it was mustard off of the hot dog, but it was actually, he was carrying his child, and when he had a diaper on, and the diaper had leaked. And so it was a joke about the father rushing to get rid of the, you know, poop out of his mouth. And anyway, the parents thought that the joke was absolutely hysterical. But one of the women in the audience said to me, you know, I'm not a parent, so I didn't think it was that funny. So your humor style does change as you go through different life experiences, and also your temperament impacts your humor style. Some people are born, you know, with a temperament that is very anxious and controlled, and other people seem to be laughing from the minute they're born. And if you have more than one child, you know that your kids are very different. And so it is fun in teaching, I always ask the educators that I work with to notice what style their kids have in the classroom as well as their own teaching style, because that too will impact the way they teach. And I became aware of this as I was teaching, realizing that some kids didn't always appreciate my humor and my jokes, hard as that might seem to believe. You know, we all have a different way of approaching humor, and so it is a great way to communicate, but I think it's really, really important that people understand that others have different communication and humor styles and different temperaments, and your humor is based both on your nature and nurture, you know, how you grew up, your temperament. Both of those things go into the development of your humor style. So that's been a real fun thing that I do a lot with teachers. And, you know, so improv is definitely one of Jason's strengths when it comes to his humor style.
Oh, you say that, but you've never actually seen me perform. May not
actually
be a strength.
You're very convincing.
But thanks for assuming so.
I would love to see you perform, Jason. I'm sure you're amazing. So,
well, I feel like on this topic of humor style, and you were just saying, Mary Kay Morrison, that, you know, your humor can often be really affected by how it is that you grow up. I think it's a great time for this. At the end of the Seward Peninsula, one man's family lives to laugh. They are Inupiaq. Humor is taken pretty seriously in Inupiaq culture. As Emily Schwing reports from Fairbanks, it's one of 17 values people live by and use to teach younger generations.
Sean Topcock is a researcher at the Alaska Native Knowledge Network at the University of Alaska Fairbanks.
Uvanga Atiga Asikluk. My Inupiaq name is Asikluk.
He's part Inupiaq, tall, completely bald, and he has two ivory piercings on either side of his bottom lip.
Yeah, in my Inupiaq language, we call them tutuk. And the men got tutuks, and the women got chin tattoos, which are called tavlugun. I like to joke around saying that because the tattoos were sewn in, and the men weren't as skillful in sewing, so when they tried to tattoo, they poked a hole through the lip and decided to put plugs in there instead.
Joking is part of Topcock's research and his culture. The Inupiaq live by 17 core values, things like knowledge of language, respect for elders, and humor. The Inupiaq people live in Alaska's far north. It's a harsh environment where humor often serves as a coping mechanism.
You have to have humor. You have to be able to have humor in your life and your learning experiences.
Topcock's Inupiaq family is from Teller on the Bering Sea coast north of Nome. Teller has a population of 229 people who spend most of their time together. Close-knit community life may be one reason why the Inupiaq tell plenty of inside jokes.
Even with amongst friends, you'd have an inside joke where you say banana, and that word banana means something to them, and they just start laughing and laughing, and they can't stop laughing. It's challenging to be able to communicate that to somebody who doesn't understand the story behind banana.
In 1999, Topcock formed an Inupiaq dance group. During practice, the dancers would also talk about their Inupiaq values. Eventually, when the seasons changed, Topcock started hosting a Katimaragut. It's a focus group for his research. Over the years, he's learned that elders use humor to teach valuable lessons to younger generations, like not crying over spilled juice.
There's one time when I was in Shishmaref and I was in my grandmother's house, and then I have a lot of cousins there because there's a lot of bigger families. And
this is one of Topcock's focus group participants. She has to remain anonymous for his research.
It was so funny because it was kind of getting crowded, and one of the older ones was having juice, and then the other one got bumped, and then right below him is like the 1 or 2 year old, and then it spilled on her. And my grandmother, she was laughing about it, and then she said, "Oh, Christina just got baptized." She was just laughing. Baptized by juice, you know, because she was a church going woman, but she was also laughing at the situation, going, instead of someone getting mad and saying, "Oh, you shouldn't do that, and don't spill juice on your sister," and instead of getting mad, she was just laughing about it.
One major lesson Inupiaq elders impart is not to take things too seriously. With a proud smile, Topcock says the Inupiaq know theirs is a special humor amongst their Native Alaskan and Native American counterparts.
One of the participants that was interviewed, and she grew up in Lower 48 and has a lot of interaction with the American Indians down there. And when she came up to visit, since she's a Inupiaq, she thought that the first thing that she saw was that she said that we're silly. We have a silly sense of humor. We're always laughing. We're always finding humor in just even the minute things.
Topcock isn't necessarily a practical joker. In fact, few Inupiaq are. Their humor is the silent kind, sometimes only indicated through body language. But Topcock does say when the laughter starts, it's usually endless. In Fairbanks, I'm Emily Schwing for Kids These Days.
Visit kidsthesedays.org to share the story or to connect to the Alaska Native Knowledge Network at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. This is Kids These Days. Today's topic is laughter and good humor. I'm Shanna Sheehy, and I'm speaking with Mary Kay Morrison and Jason Martin this hour. I'd like to invite you guys to respond to that. Let's start with maybe you, Jason.
Oh, I'd love to. Yeah, I had had the great privilege of working on the movie Everybody Loves Whales, then later renamed to Big Miracle.
Right, the whale movie.
The whale
sort
movie.
Of the short term.
Yeah,
it,
the whale movie. That's mm-hmm. the one. And there was an Athabascan gentleman on there that he and I got to work in, on scene quite a few times. And he had that subtle sense of humor that it wasn't. I mean, I tend to be a little over the top and a little over animated, which works well on stage. But he was just very, very subtle, and I loved his sense of humor for it. It was just so, I used the term brilliant, and I don't throw that around very easily. But he had a way of just bringing the room to its knees with laughter just by raising an eyebrow, just by the subtlety. So when Mr. Topcock was just talking, I really related to that fact for that reason. I mean, a slightly different culture, but the same type of humor where it's just very subtle and it's underspoken, but so powerful because of it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Mary Kay Morrison, you know, do you have any comments on how culture can affect humor?
Absolutely. I really liked what he was saying about how they transmit laughter and fun to their children. And I think it's so important for parents and the community to share with kids as many aspects of humor and laughter as they can. And I always encourage parents to read to their kids every day. Kids love funny books. They love joke books. If a kid is having trouble reading, I encourage laughter and fun books for them, riddle books. Every day after school, parents can ask their children, what was funny about today? Instead of saying, what did you do in school today? Just
That's
say,
a great
what
idea.
Was funny about today? What did you laugh about today? Laugh at their jokes. I loved the segment you did with the kids' jokes today. Laugh at their jokes even if you think they're silly or if they don't make sense. And have a weekly fun night with families. You know, and when you travel, I like to wrap gifts in the car that are kind of gag gifts or joke gifts. It makes the travel go quicker. So explore ways that you can share humor and laughter with your children and with your families and with your community. Don't be afraid to play, and don't let the humor doomers get you down. Those are people that are stuck in humor phobia. That's my term for people that can suck the energy right out of you and the fun right out of you. So,
the humor doomer. Very good term.
I'm so stealing it, Mary Kay. Thank you.
And I'm so glad, Mary Kay, actually, that you mentioned how to incorporate humor into family life. That was one of my questions, in fact. And you said laugh at your little kids' jokes, even when they're not necessarily very funny. And you mentioned that piece that we heard in the first half of the show. Well, we have another one. Jessica also visited Mrs. Miller's primary classroom at Anchorage's Denali Montessori. That's first, second, and third grade classroom. Most of her students, at least, have the basic format of a knock-knock joke down, unlike the younger kids. And for them, a little logic has crept into their sense of humor as well.
Donovan, what goes pet, pet, boom?
What?
A chicken in a minefield.
Cool. Nice. Okay. Who's next?
Wyatt. What happened to the chicken who got into a fight?
What happened?
He got the stuffing knocked out of him.
How do you make a tissue dance?
How do you do that?
Put a little boogie in it.
All right. And what's your name?
Logan.
Okay. Bear, do you have one?
Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Apple.
Apple who?
Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Apple.
Apple who?
Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Apple who? Apple.
Apple who?
Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Apple.
Does this joke ever change? Okay. Apple who?
Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Orange.
Orange who?
Orange, you got it. This is Apple.
quartz.
Okay, how does your joke start?
Where does army keep fish?
Where does the army keep fish?
Yep.
Where?
In tanks.
Oh, nice. Okay, ready? Okay, Bryce, how does your joke start?
What did the ocean say to the boat?
I don't know what.
It just kept waving.
I just kept waving?
Yeah.
Cute. All right, ready?
Jasper, okay. What is a favorite rock song?
Say it one more time.
What is a favorite rock song?
I don't know. What's a favorite rock song?
Rock and roll.
Oh, cute. All right. Lily?
Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Dwayne.
Dwayne who?
Dwayne the bathtub. I'm drowning.
Sierra.
Okay.
What do you get when you cross a snowman with a vampire?
What?
Frostbite.
What do you call a chicken that crosses the that rocks across the road, rolls in mud, rocks across the road again, and rolls in mud?
I don't know. What do you call it?
A dirty double crosser.
Double crosser. Okay. All right, last one, Jasper.
Where do polar bears vote?
I don't know. Where do polar bears vote?
In the North Pole.
Oh, cute. Okay, Nyagwa, you have one?
Why did the chicken cross the world?
Why?
Because it likes crossing the world.
I like it.
This is Kids These Days, a once-weekly conversation about youth and family issues important to all Alaskans. Jason Martin and Mary Kay Morrison are with me today talking about good humor and laughter this hour, and I'm Shanna Sheehy. And we just heard first, second, and third graders giving us a glimpse of what it is like to have a sense of humor when you're that age. And I laughed. How about you, Jason?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
How about you, Mary Kay?
That was awesome. I loved it.
I think the one at the end is the way I remember telling jokes, where they weren't actually funny, but that to me was really funny. I wasn't the class clown. In fact, you know, Jason, I wanted you to go back to mentioning in the very, very beginning of this conversation, mm-hmm. you said that you were called the class clown on more than one occasion. So I'm wondering, you know, being the class clown, was your classroom sort of your first audience group? Were you testing some of your performance abilities there, even if maybe you didn't know it at the time?
You know, we had a really big family. We still do. Most of my relatives live here in Alaska. So we would all go up to Nancy Lake, where my grandfather, he owned the marina at the time. So we had access to this really large house. And there would be, every weekend, there would be 20 or 30 of us up there, cousins, aunts, uncles. And that was really kind of my first, I guess, comedic audience there because even in school, even early, you know, you're told you can't say that, you can't eat the glue, you can't do those things, you can't, you know, rubbing brown markers on your pants to make it look like you pooped yourself is not funny to everybody. I sure thought it was funny, but there, it's a different audience there when you're playing in front of your family. And it's a more trusting audience, and it's an audience that will allow you to get away with more, to a certain extent, obviously, before a parent has to step in and say, you know, matches aren't funny, apparently, unless they're used in the right context, like with aerosol cans and garbage cans. Not to be giving the little listeners too many ideas, but comedy doesn't come in the form of blowing up your garage, according to my mom. So
she seems like a wise woman.
She is a wise woman, except for encouraging my sense of humor, which,
well,
you know.
Okay, so that's kind of where I was going with this, which is, you know, if you have a child who's funny or mm-hmm. interested in being funny, you know, how do you nurture that as a parent, you know?
Well, you know, I think Mary Kay said it best when she was talking about it, just, you know, when they come home from school, and Mary Kay gave me goosebumps when you're talking about that, because every night we sit down with our son, my wife and I, and we do a high-low. We just say, you know, what was your biggest challenge today? And he talks about his challenge, and I'll talk about mine, and my wife will talk about hers, and we just, you know, kind of talk that through. And then, what was your high of today? What was the thing you were most fond of? You know, what happened today that was so great? But then just the way you phrased that, Mary Kay, was so impactful to me, because that's a side of development that we so often overlook. You know, what was funny about today is just such a wonderful question, because it opens up so many more answers than simply what was fun about today or what was good about today. To me, it's kind of that elevator talk analogy where, you know, you just say, how are you? I'm good. How are you? Oh, I'm good. How's the weather? Oh, the weather's nice. It's sure. Yeah. So it's unseasonably warm this time of year. You know, that stuff just to me doesn't matter. But when you ask that deeper question like that, when you ask the question, you know, what was funny about today? It just, it's so much more enriching, and that question to me has so many more answers that are more interesting. I loved it. I loved it.
Yeah,
I went on a tangent just now, but just want to tell Mary Kay, you're awesome.
Thank you.
Well, you know, another element that I wanted to talk about today on the show is the emotional side of laughter and good humor. And when I was thinking about my own life and the things that I find funny and the times that I remember laughing, you know, so many of those times that I remember are moments where I've laughed so hard that it goes from laughter into something else that's a combination of crying and not breathing and laughing. And I sometimes notice this connection between laughing and crying. And I just wonder about that. And if you guys maybe have any comments about whether or not that's a common experience, and if it is a common experience, what's happening there? Mary Kay, maybe can ask you first.
Laughter and tears are really closely related. One of the things that I've learned through the Association of Applied and Therapeutic Humor and the research that goes on is that when you are able to laugh about something that's tragic or difficult in your life, you know you're starting to heal. Mm. And so even at funerals, a lot of the people that I work with in AATH are in positions where they're dealing with the grieving process. And how do you get people to process, not that you can laugh right away or force it in any situation, but all learning and all events go through the emotions. Your emotions are very strong, and that is what you remember. If you think about what you remembered from second and third grade, chances are whatever you've remembered is tied to a very strong emotion. So I asked teachers, you know, to go around and tell what they remember from their experience in second or third grade. And a lot of them are really stories of being put down or punished or whatever. And so my final message to teachers is, what do you want your students to remember at the end of the year or 30 or 40 years from now about your class? It's not going to be the phonics you taught. It's not going to be spelling. It's going to be the feelings they remember from being in your class. So feelings and emotions are very important, and I think it's critical that we leave kids and each other with feelings of happiness and joy rather than feelings of stress, anxiety, and fear.
Well, I have to say that this has been a hugely enjoyable hour of kids these days talking about laughter and good humor. I can't think of a better way to spend the time, actually.
Absolutely, yeah. This is great. Very therapeutic all the way around.
Thank you, Shanna. It is, unfortunately, though, all the time that we do have today. So Mary Kay Morrison is an international humor educator. You can find out more about her and her work, including her books, at questforhumor.com. And we here at Kids These Days, at kidstheseDays.org, will link you to her site so you can head on over to us for that as well. Jason Martin is an improvisational performer with the Alaska-based group Scared Scriptless. We'll link to more information about him and his comedy troupe as well. Thank you both for being with me today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Shanna.
Shanna, thanks for having us on Kids These Days. It was great.
Emily Schwing reported for Kids These Days today from Fairbanks. Jessica Cochran is our regular contributor and technical editor. This program is produced by Sarah Gonzalez. Sarah is also our web content editor and business manager. Lost Lander composed and performed our theme music and other original pieces. Dave Waldron at Alaska Public Radio Network is an honorary member of our team, as are KSKA's Beatty Trentina and APTI's Gina Evans. A huge thank you to all of our supporters everywhere. It's been a great season. Stay up to date online at kidstheseDays.org. Our featured bloggers are there along with tons of stuff in our archive. I'm Shanna Sheehy. Thanks for spending time with me today. I'll see you next time.
Kids These Days is an independent production of the Content Producers Guild. The opinions shared on the program are those of the host, guest, and contributors and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of KTD producers, partners, or funders. Major funding for Kids These Days comes from the Association of Alaska School Boards and its Initiative for Community Engagement. The program is made in partnership with KSKA-FM in Anchorage and the Alaska Public Radio Network. Find out more about Kids These Days anytime at kidstheseDays.org.